Disruption, a lively discussion between UVA Darden School of Business professors Yael Grushka-Cocaine and Mike Lennox on cutting-edge technologies and practices that are challenging the status quo.
It is an absolute pleasure to have everyone with us today. This is our second live version of Good Disruption that we've done over the last past year and a half here. So we're very excited to be able to engage with you. Just to give you a sense of what we're going to do, Yael and I are going to talk a little bit about some of the trends we see here in 2024. We're going to bring in our expert to help us think through this. But of course, we also want to have the opportunity, given that we have a live format today, to answer your questions. So to begin, Happy New Year, Yael, 2024.
I'm curious, Happy New Year,
what's
Mike.
What's your feeling right now? Are you feeling excited? Are you feeling scared? What does 2024, you know, feel to you at this point?
Well, first, Happy New Year. I don't know when we have to stop saying that, but I feel like we can still say that. As long as
it's still January.
As long as I see names that we haven't seen, that I haven't seen since 2023, I think I'm okay to still say Happy New Year. I'm excited about the year ahead. It feels like we might finally stop saying due to COVID or after COVID, and we might kind of go back to really feeling like we're operating in our previous lives, if that is a thing. And I'm excited about all the innovation that is coming our way. And so I look forward to hearing your thoughts on it and maybe some concerns that I haven't been looking at, but I'm super excited. Yeah.
If you've listened to our podcast, you know Yael and I are like natural optimists here. So I love to hear the optimism. Everything I read says that everyone is fearing 2024, that this is going to be an awful, awful year. You know, if Mother Nature doesn't kill us, the machines will. You know, this is what we're looking at here. I worry that, you know, at the end of the day, the biggest threat to humanity is probably humans, right? Like it normally is here. But, you know, hopefully we can see some silver linings on the future here.
Yeah. I mean, what's top of mind for you in terms of a silver lining? If you were to focus, if I would try to shield you from some of the negativity that you're reading out there, what would be some positives that you see coming down in the next few months?
One of it is just perspective. So one of the fun things I've gotten to do over the last year is get involved with an initiative on democracy and capitalism that UVA's Miller Center is sponsoring. And as part of that, I've gotten to work with a lot of historians, including Scott Miller, who teaches here at Darden. And the historians are actually very soothing because no matter how bad it gets, they're able to say things like, you think 2024 is going to be bad. What about 1908 or 1882?
It was worse. It was once worse.
Yeah, it was once worse. And it does put it in perspective because I think we always think we are at a moment in time in history that are like no other, that technology is different than it's ever been before. And we're going to lose all our jobs and the machines are going to take over. Like, you know, it allows you to kind of say, let's take a pause. Let's calm down. And as like we do like to do in our podcast, give us an opportunity to really, let's dig a little deeper and try to understand kind of some of the trends we're seeing.
And I agree with you. I mean, yes, there are problems that we need to solve. There are issues, there are social issues, there are technology issues, there are health issues, and real problems that require deep thought and attention, messy problems. But if you do take that perspective look and you think, back a few decades and centuries, indeed, we've made a lot of progress, and we should all kind of remind ourselves often that we live in pretty good times on many, many dimensions. I like your word perspective. I feel the same. I'm involved with a lot of activity at UVA related to generative AI. And my sense is that we're kind of reaching a different place in that conversation where we're starting to see more usable and accessible tools, and folks are getting less intimidated and getting a little bit more used to having those tools around, and it will become more of a normal part of our life as opposed to a big angst of conversation. And so that perspective that we no longer have to think about it as if we're on a cliff, but actually we're progressing down in a productive manner. I'm excited about that. And I feel that we're really on the cusp of that.
Yeah. And we've talked about AI quite a bit on our podcast. And, you know, I'll just make the observation we've made a number of times, like this isn't within the last 16 months, right? Like this is a trend that has been going and being worked on for decades, going back arguably 40, 50 years. And yes, we are at an interesting point in time in the evolution of AI, but don't fool yourself that this just kind of miraculously appeared in November 2020, what would have been 2022, when OpenAI released ChatGPT 3.5. Right. Well, that is actually highlights something we wanted to discuss and I wanted to bring up, which are, what are some of the big trends? And just like we all do in our new day and age that we have here, I asked ChatGPT, now the 4.0 version, what they would say. And so here's what they came up with. I'm just going to share the top five that they had on the list there. Not surprisingly, ChatGPT thinks artificial intelligence and machine learning is number one technology trend that we need to be paying
attention. It's not self-centered at all, ChatGPT.
It's not. Maybe it does have sentence now if it's saying that. Number two, renewable energy. So something dear to your heart.
Yep. We
talked quite a bit about. Biotechnology and genetic engineering, which I've reminded listeners many times, I know little about, but I'm trying. I'm trying to be a little more sophisticated in that area. Number four, augmented reality and virtual reality, another topic we've discussed in the past. And then number five is one that we haven't dived deep in, quantum computing. Yes. And I was in a conversation with someone at a quantum computing firm, and they're promising it's coming soon and it's going to be big. So that's one we definitely want to be keeping our eyes on. But I'd be curious, which ones resonate with you? Which ones are you, again, top of mind?
Yeah, it's interesting. When I thought about our conversation and thinking about the trends and the things that should be top of mind for CEOs walking into 2024, or maybe 1 month already into 2024, the sustainability aspect and the generative AI clearly rose to the top. In both domains, I do expect some kind of normalization and some ability to bring in the technology and to start using it, as opposed to just ask the big question as to what it is and what the impact is. So folks are going to start to see the impact and appreciate. And so some of the mystery might get resolved. And I'm excited about that. I do think that there are some trends. First, quantum computing, like the other two that we've been talking about, has been in the works for a long time. So it's not necessarily new. It's that all the stars are aligned and our capabilities have evolved so much. So it's becoming more accessible to the masses or more accessible to more people. And therefore, you're going to see these various capabilities come together to produce incredible progress and results. I'm excited about things like 3D fashion and things that we know that we want to talk about in our podcast and we haven't talked about. I think the awareness to living a sustainable life, recycling, not having waste, themes that relate to some of the other trends will appear in other aspects of our lives that we haven't quite totally embraced. And so I'm excited about the potential there, and I'll be on the lookout for that.
Well, to your latter point there, again, all who know me know that I'm very passionate about issues around sustainability and clean tech and the like. I had in my strategy in the digital age course just this week, a couple partners from one of the premier kind of VC investing companies who had a history of investing in some of the leading digital technology companies. And at the end, the students asked, what's on the horizon? Where are you seeing investment opportunities? And they actually pointed to clean tech, and in particular, the re-envisioning of the grid that is necessary to make things like renewables really work at scale. And what I find really fascinating about this particular challenge is it's also an AI challenge, right? This is a big data problem. This is actually a real integration of what we're seeing with data analytics, AI, machine learning, and then the technologies that then will form this, what would probably be a very highly distributed electrical grid that we're kind of moving towards in the future here.
And I know you've been looking and excited about that one for a while. Yeah. What about the augmented reality? That was number four on your list, I believe. We've talked about it, you and I. When is the day when we will be replaced by an avatar professor? Are all our classes going to be moved to the metaverse? Are we going to see more embracing of the technology by companies in various functions? What do you think?
Well, actually, in full disclosure, I'm not here right now. This is actually the avatar version of me acting.
That's why you're making so much sense, Mike. It all makes sense now.
Yeah. No, this isn't a deep fake. This is me here. You know what it makes me think about is like 2-3 years ago, all the buzz was crypto, right? Everything was about blockchain, crypto, NFTs. That was going to be the future. And then, a little bit after that, the metaverse and augmented reality and virtual reality. And now this year, generative AI, right? Like that's the future. And I think one bit of advice I would have for our executives and others is you have to understand the distinction between the technology life cycle and the hype cycle. The hype cycle gets a lot of attention here. And I think a lot of times it's misunderstood. So this is an area where I do a lot of research, and you see these very common patterns where you get massive interest in entry and you get lots of different companies coming in, and then you get a shakeout. And if you think about the hype cycle, you know, we're at that point in generative AI where there's been just everybody is starting an AI company at this point, or at least what they might call an AI company. I always like to say, and when I get accused of being a technology futurist, I reject that idea because I have no idea where technology is going. But I do know we can look at the patterns. And my guess is that in the next year, we're going to see a lot of failed AI companies. And the public generally and the media will interpret it as, oh, AI is way overblown, and this is a big disruption, and we overreacted. In the same way we've done with blockchain, in the same way we've done with the metaverse. But again, have the long view in mind. How are these technologies continuing to improve? And understand there might not just be one hype cycle. There might actually be multiple hype cycles that occur over the history of this technology. AI has gone through a number of these over, again, many, many decades here. So make sure to distinguish the hype cycle from the actual underlying technology life cycle there, because they are different, and the one often fools people about the potential of the other.
And I agree, as someone who worked in San Francisco around the year 2000, 2001, and has experienced firsthand the dot-com boom and bust, you could feel it, and you could feel it very strongly, that there was a hype, there was an exaggeration, if you will, in terms of involvement of companies and ideas. And eventually, of course, it burst and it kind of plateaued, and it came back down to a more organic and realistic level where companies had more time and space to actually focus on a few ideas and take them further. And our world has never been the same, right? The internet and what we can do online, and all of the ideas that were then swarming, some of them got implemented and really blossomed since. But as we think about it, we think also about what CEOs are worried about. I know that on top of mind is also like, what does this mean to our company? What does it mean to our workforce, for the folks that we have? How do we think about investing in our workforce? Who should we hire? How should we train them? How should we develop them? And I wanted to invite our guest to join the conversation. Is now a good time, Mike? Is that okay?
Excellent. Let's bring in Devin.
Okay, so I'm really honored that Devin Biganis can join us today. Devin is our Chief Client Officer for Darden's Executive Education and Lifelong Learning, a real partner for us in crafting various programs for organizations to think about their training, their development, how should they think about the type of company they want to be, and the people that they bring on you know, to join them in the organizations, and how they develop them to be both thought leaders, but also executors. So Devin, welcome to our podcast, Good Disruption. Tell us, what do you think is on the horizon for CEOs in 2024?
Oh, thank you so much, Yael. And first of all, Mike and Yael, thanks so much for having me. I'm a big fan of the podcast. So this is actually fulfilling since the podcast launched, like a dream that I could be a guest on this podcast. So really appreciate it. You guys obviously do a great job on the podcast. So thrilled to be here and thrilled to join the conversation. You know, Yael, as you were all talking about sort of all of these trends, you know, there's two things that I think kind of may frame this discussion. One is, if you think about the speed that business is now moving at, right? It's moving at a faster pace than ever before. Recently, somebody compared it to sort of leading in the fog at speed, right? So you're kind of not sure where you're going. It's moving faster. That's one element, I think, of this discussion, is how do you make sense of those different sort of that kind of a visceral analogy. The other one would be, what are those external and internal trends that are on CEOs' minds or senior leaders' minds, right? So the external trends would be some of the ones you've talked about, right? Generative AI, climate change, you know, macro political sort of things that are happening in the world. And so all of that is external to a company that clearly have varying effects on a company's sort of ability to execute its strategy. The other ones are the internal trends, right? So that's some of the stuff, Yael, you were just talking about, right? That's sort of, you know, the war for talent, as they used to call it, or, you know, the growing role that middle managers play. When you've got a lot of middle managers in the organization that frankly need to be upskilled, right? Succession planning, talent development. How do you recruit, retain, and develop the best talent you can for your organization? And so I think those are some of the internal challenges that CEOs or senior leaders have that can get, you know, accelerated or impacted by the external trends. And so it is a complicated role. It's a complicated world, as both of you know, through all of the work that, you know, we do together with organizations. And so it's a fascinating time. But Mike, I definitely am an optimist, right? So I think there's a, with any challenge comes some opportunities for companies to find their lane or find value in the opportunities that could be created. So it's a fascinating question.
And Devin, I think you make a great point there that while you describe it as an external and internal forces, we're living in the day and age, because partly due to technology, that there is the divide is very thin, if it exists at all, meaning internally in organizations, we're seeing the same kind of pressures that the outside world is delivering. And kind of putting that in perspective, I think implies that CEOs have to constantly revisit and ask themselves, how much do we want to engage with topics that matter outside of the walls of the firm and inside the walls of the firm?
Devin, yeah, no, it's a great point. Yeah.
But I'm curious from your perspective, you deal with a lot of different industry sectors, including, you know, government sector and others mm-hmm. as well. Are you seeing much difference or is everybody have fairly similar concerns, maybe about the external, maybe about the internal?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Mike. And in the work that we do within sort of executive education and lifelong learning, a lot of the people we're talking to are either CEOs, CFOs, COOs, or there's the whole suite of chief learning officers, chief talent officers, chief human resource officers. And so I think, you know, I think it's yes and no, like many questions, Mike. You know, we've had a 50-year relationship with the U.S. Navy to help them strategically all the way up to, you know, admirals level development. And then we do a lot with corporations on a global basis, you know, Kraft Heinz and Edward Jones, et cetera, that are publicly sort of, you know, relationships we have. So I think there are definitely some, yes, there's some areas where there's a different, right? Military government tends to take the longer view, right? They don't have stock price on a quarterly basis, or they do tend to take the more mission driven, you know, view, whereas corporations obviously have both long-term goals as well as short-term pressures, right? But then I do think, you know, Yael and Mike, some of the things you were talking about affect these industries, you know, no matter what industry you're in. AI is impacting military government work as well as corporations, obviously, or the war for talent is key in those. So I think, you know, a lot of times when we talk to clients, we talk about the content and the context of what we're doing. So the content might be the same, right? How do you drive financial value? How do you think strategically? How do you make good decisions? But the context of two organizations could be radically different, right? It's the great quote about no man stands in the same river twice, right? Because they are different and the river is different, right? And so the context of operating in an organization are different. Or yes, exactly. I absolutely should be they. No man, woman, or they stands in the same river twice, right? So
I'm going to pick up on I have a question for both of you, actually. Specifically, I want to pick up on this trend on the idea, the disruption of augmented reality that we mentioned before you joined us, Devin. I know that you and some of our colleagues have been experimenting with using it in the classroom and helping or using various versions of either the metaverse or some augmented reality kind of device to engage learners and to help them learn various skills that otherwise are hard to deliver. Do you think that trend will continue? How has been the adoption? What has been the reception? And Mike, to you, do you think that we'll see another wave of improvement of some of those technologies so they're more available to the everyday individual?
Mike, you want to take that one first and then I can take it in a learning direction?
Oh, sure. I think, you know, when we think about technologies and the way they improve, there's a couple different important ways to think about them, right? Sometimes it's about cost, right? Are we driving down the cost curve where these technologies now find adoption more likely in different verticals? Sometimes the technology is just too expensive to find widespread adoption. Apple is coming out with their, you know, VR goggles. I don't know about you, they seem pretty expensive to me, but maybe that's sufficient to, you know, create, you know, sufficient demand there. There'll be sufficient demand there. But that's one part of it. Of course, there's the value proposition piece of that. And that has a lot of different pieces. Sometimes it's not the technology per se, but it's finding out that killer app. It's finding out that specific use case, or just very simply the business model to kind of make that work for a business. And so what I see when we see these hot moments in technology, and I think where a lot of companies often struggle, is, all right, generative AI, it's out there. People can see that there's potential here in the use of this technology in any number of different applications, but it's not uniform. It's going to be very spiky. There are going to be places where, wow, this is ready, it's now, and it is going to transform our industry. There's going to be other places, though, and I fear that, you know, companies are diving in and they're spending a lot on this, and it's maybe not right yet. We're not there either from a cost perspective or from the technology perspective. And understanding that there's going to be this quite a bit of variance across the use cases, depending on your industry and even depending on who you are as a firm, is such a critical piece to observe. Just one last thing. When we talk in our first year strategy class, we talk about the strategist challenge, that valuable competitive positions emerge from the intersection of your values and mission as an organization, the opportunities the market provides, and the capabilities you have as an organization. And I think one of the challenges when it comes to technology is we chase the opportunity side and don't ask critically, wait a minute, are we the ones best positioned to chase that opportunity? Is it meet our capabilities and our values and mission? Or in fact, is there someone else who's better positioned? So I always like to use the line, you know, running to somebody who says, we want to be the Google of X. And my response is, Google's going to be the Google of X. You need to go back to the drawing board and rethink this strategy, because you aren't best positioned to achieve this market opportunity. So I think I think everyone's jumping on the bandwagon and they all think they need to be doing generative AI. And my advice would be, slow down, be critical, think about your situation and decide whether or not it's really right for you at this moment in time.
Yeah, no, Mike, that's a great segue to Yael, your question from a learning perspective. And the segue is, as Darden Executive Education Lifelong Learning, how do we really follow the key strategy? And a lot of what learning and executive education is it's a moment to experiment, to reflect, to learn, right? You come to a place like Charlottesville or Washington, D.C. or wherever to sort of try out new things, right? And reflect and try different tactics, behaviors, tools, you know, learn how to have a difficult conversation in a better way, or learn how to think more strategically in a moment where you can maybe take a breath and say, okay, I'm not in the day-to-day pressures that I face at Google or, you know, wherever I might be. And so I think AR is, and we've done this in the executive program, TEP, that we run, where part of it was giving them awareness of what does AR look like? What does the meta, you know, what does the metaverse look like? But a lot of it is also learning how companies are, you know, publicly using AR to recreate very complicated environments, right? Like healthcare procedures and a surgeon, you know, practicing brain surgery. That's not an easy thing to stage to give someone opportunities to practice, right? But whereas you could create that environment in the metaverse, or a fast food chain who creates a, you know, a kitchen where people can practice making, you know, making a meal as fast as they can, or, you know, a military environment. These are tough environments to recreate without a lot of funding. In AR, you could do that fairly easily. And so the awareness, the practice, a lot of what experiential learning that we pride ourselves on is to put yourself in an environment where the natural behaviors come out, right? You know, in a high performing, you know, team environment, like a race car pit crew challenge, you know, your natural behaviors come out. And then you can debrief it really well to say, just see what you did there, right? You know, you became much like this. I bet you do that back at work. Whereas the, you know, the metaverse is another example of where you might get people to exhibit these natural behaviors that then can be learning moments to reflect upon. So yeah, from your perspective, how are you seeing this as you think about one of the things that you teach a lot in our type of programs is critical thinking, decision-making, yeah. You know, how do you really take stock? How do you see the speed that some of these trends, you know, create affected by that? Obviously people make decisions at speed. That's a different environment than making it when you have all the time in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think that these tools are great for, as you mentioned, to simulate scenarios that otherwise, even when we try to get like a role play going in the classroom, sometimes it doesn't get as meaty as we would like. And so we often talk about, when we talk about critical thinking or when I teach decision analysis, I try to put the learners in that moment when they're trying to defend their decision and get folks on board and persuade and influence others. I can imagine that, or I'm excited to try it out and to experiment with doing this in other formats and other platforms, like using some kind of mode of virtual reality or some kind of metaverse environment to put folks in a different role, in a different identity, to let them play it out and try new things and experiment when it's kind of taken outside, so to speak, the four walls of our classroom. I've also had conversations with some of my colleagues that teach leadership, developing skills like, giving bad news to an employee or having to let folks go or having tough conversations in the organization, which leaders these days face more and more of. These types of tools can allow us a little bit of a sandbox, a place to experiment and play around with. And I think the more that they get developed, they will be embraced by their organizations. So I'm excited to see where that's going. I've been a child growing up in a household that has been obsessed with Star Trek. And the day that I have my holodeck can't come too soon. So
I like what you're highlighting here about some of the skills that we need. Are skills that we've always needed in companies. And technology can actually enhance our ability to improve those skills. It can also put stresses on our ability to deliver on them. But I think we all agree that in this day and age, in a more digitally enabled age or technology enabled age, those distinctly human skills are actually becoming even more valuable than they've been in the past. I like to quote some work done at the University of Toronto who made this observation that at the end of the day, especially with AI, it really is a prediction machine. But what it allows you to do requires still judgment on top of that. And that's a distinctively human characteristic. And that in a world where the cost of prediction is going down because of AI, the value of that complementary good of judgment actually increases. And so that whole aspect of kind of the human part of our engagement with this technology is becoming more and more valuable. And it's something we need to put more and more kind of emphasis on in our training and the like.
Mike and Yael, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead, Devin. Go ahead.
I was going to ask a reframe a question maybe at a higher level. You know, I was reading something recently that said a CEO, and we may have some CEOs on today's session. We also, may have some aspiring CEOs who would like to be CEOs in life. And one of the article I was reading said, a CEO really has to embrace sort of different mindsets, like a chief people officer, right? Or a chief sustainability officer, or a chief risk officer, right? You both work with a lot of either CEOs or aspiring CEOs, some very much aspiring CEOs, on the grounds here at Darden. What advice would you give, or have you given, to students who are thinking about that as an aspirational role? Like, what's the advice of how to get there? And then once you are there, how do you stay there effectively and make the most of the opportunity to be a CEO? What advice would you give aspiring CEOs out there?
I'm happy to take a first stab at it, only for Mike to come back and probably answer better. But my advice has been along the lines of thinking about change and having a vision and a passion for change. So if you find ways to motivate yourself, like as an individual, and then in your role as a leader in an organization, to be curious about where the future is going, to recognize that change is always going to happen and it's going to happen fast, and to think about the possibilities that your firm and your industry are facing with enthusiasm and playing around with those future scenarios. As Mike says, it's all about getting comfortable with predictions and then making judgments based on those predictions. I really think that you need to be a change agent, and you need to empower your people around you to be a change agent. And with that always comes some appetite for experimentation. that's, I think, going to be become more and more valuable. We saw some of that post-COVID. We saw the idea of being agile and being nimble as a skill and as a capability that really separated firms out and leaders out. And I think here we're talking about the appetite for change and being able to be enthusiastic about change and embrace it and bring and give folks, not only not bring them with you, but actually let them lead you in various exciting directions into the future. So I've heard folks talk about change with a vision for how their organization is going to continue to grow and modify. And I think that that's something really important for CEOs these days. Mike, what about you?
I'm in 100% agreement, and I can't do any better than that. So I'm just going to do it again, but do it worse than that. I want to hit on that word agility, and it's a little bit cliche at this point. Everyone talks about it, but I think it is absolutely critical. You know, to my earlier point, that it's incredibly hard to predict where technologies are going. So you have to be nimble and understanding that you probably will have to change some of your assumptions and pivot at some point as you move forward. So then the question becomes, you know, as a CEO, how do you demonstrate agility and how do you build that into the organization? Our colleague Ed Hess has a great book called Humility is the New Smart. And it's a wonderful little book if you're interested. And, you know, he talks about the idea of humility as a core value. Again, you don't know the future. The future is inherently uncertain. It doesn't mean we don't think about the future. We don't plan, but of course we do all of those things. But don't fool yourself that you figured it out and you know the way the world's going to evolve. And I think that starts at the CEO position, and then it has to filter through the entire organization. And so humility requires you to be able to listen. It requires you to be able to be proven wrong. It requires you to inspire others to push your thinking. So, you know, maybe the stereotype of the more dictator-oriented CEO, it doesn't work in this day and age. It's just a command and control. We know where we're going. Here we go. Here's what you need to do. And your orders, follow your orders. That just doesn't work in a world of hyper uncertainty where technology is moving as fast as it is. So you have to demonstrate those behaviors in yourself. And then how do you then inspire them throughout your organization? You know, one of the kind of Silicon Valley tropes is this idea of fail fast. The number, especially of established companies that I've worked with, who really struggle with that fairly simple concept, that they just don't have the mechanisms in place to really allow for failure. And as we all know, it's not about failure. It's really about learning. How do you experiment and learn? And then if it doesn't work out, that's okay, because we learned something and now we can go in a new direction. Behaviorally, that can be really hard for an organization to embrace that value.
I love great. That. And you did add so much insight to that. And I love your notion of humility and humbleness. And that's something that being an active listener is very hard. We, in our Socratic method in the classroom, we really try to help folks learn how to do that and reward them for it and celebrate the fact that we learn how to listen and we practice it ourselves. It's not always easy to do, for sure. Marla in the chat has a great question that I wanted to ask you guys. Are there any ways for individuals who want to prepare their organization for that AI move? If they want to prepare themselves for that kind of AI-empowered environment, are there any steps that they need to take, any services, anything that you could recommend that they need to do in terms of prep work? I'm curious to your thoughts. Any questions they should ask specifically?
Yeah, Mike, I'll go first and maybe try to set you up to then equal it or actually probably exceed it as well. And I'll take
what you're all doing is buying me time to think that this is good.
We'll go with that. It's first mover disadvantage, I think, right. In this case as well. But so it's a great question that the viewer raised. And I think some of it is back to Mike, how you were talking about it, where AI has to sort of be an addition to your strategy, right? I don't think, you know, you might have to pivot to get to where AI can help you or not hurt you. But I do think the best companies are going to be those who see where AI and that kind of world can help their strategy or accelerate their strategy, right? So it's not an authentic strategic sort of shift that they're making. And then the other thing is, I think from a people standpoint, it's how do you encourage experimentation? Like you talked about fail fast, right? It's the ability that, you know, the companies that can experiment and have that experimentation cycle run really fast are going to be the better ones, right? So organizational experiments and individual experiments where they can incorporate AI in that so that they can experiment really fast and learn. And then by the eighth, ninth time they've done it, they're going to be much better equipped when it actually does become a real critical sort of, you know, mission critical thing. Those would be some of my things is how do we encourage much more experimentation? And then how do you go back to really thinking strategically so that it's an authentic strategic choice to implement an element of AI in a macro strategy?
I'm reminded of a quote from Peter Drucker that I love, which is the failure of once successful companies is rarely that they forget what made them successful. It is that what made them successful is no longer viable in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And that's the heart of technological change and transitions. With that said, I have never seen an organization just reject wholesale what they've done in the past and reinvent themselves as like a digitally native company. It just doesn't happen. So what I always talk about is you need to evolve your capabilities. And that evolution is really important because it means, again, that you just can't throw everything out and start from scratch. And so having that, you know, goes back to what we're talking about agility here and learning, that mindset of how do we begin to experiment? How do we begin to see how we might use these technologies, start to identify how we might need to evolve our capabilities, but recognize again that whatever our strategy might be, it still has to be based on the fundamental premises of kind of what's providing us competitive advantage out in the marketplace there.
One of the things we talk a lot about at Darden is lifelong learning, right? This notion of sort of how do you reinvent yourself both in a role, but also as you grow older, we're working longer, you know, sort of people are working in careers longer in their lives potentially. How do you frame lifelong learning for people who are on the webinar or listening to the podcast? Of what advice would you have them for them of how to have that lifelong learning? Yael, you talked earlier about a growth mindset, right? That ability to sort of, you know, be thinking always about optimism and always about growth. But what advice would you have to leaders about how they can embrace this lifelong learning mindset and what that might mean for them?
Well, I think it's, again, with the development of various modalities of learning, for instance, online learning, the fact that you can take courses from wherever you are, the fact that you can consume content asynchronously at your own pace. Of course, you can take time off and you can come and take various classes in person. I do think that folks maybe forget how much fun it is to be in the classroom, how much they are enriched by learning a new topic and just embracing and kind of spending some time just enriching themselves. And so I hope that the people on this call for sure can imagine lifelong learning as just an opportunity to continue to invest in yourself, really an opportunity to give yourself some space, whatever that is. And that could be every week, a certain amount of time or 1 week a year or every few years. Like think about it actively, plan for it. Think about when you're going to do that, when you're going to take that time off from your day to day and invest in yourself and learn something for the sake of learning. Not everything will immediately translate. Some things will be actual skills that you're going to feel like you really need. And some other learning is just going to enrich and push your thinking and remind you how to think about new ideas and to ask the right questions and to seek out answers in areas that you're not as fluent in. Those are skills that they're like, you know, a muscle that if we don't exercise, it kind of gets weaker and weaker. And so if you can continue to challenge yourself and be in environments that challenge you to learn something new and to grasp new ideas, new techniques, new technologies, then I think you'll have that for life. And that for me is lifelong learning. And I'm just excited that the opportunities and the entry points are much bigger than they used to be.
Yeah. You know, I mentioned humility before. I think maybe number two on my list would be curiosity. And it really goes to exactly what Yael was talking about there. Especially when it comes to technology, you know, we talk a lot on this podcast. The name of the podcast is Good Disruption. And so the disruption piece by its very nature might imply fear, might imply that this is a bad thing. And we often use disruption in that phrase. The reason we put the good in front of it was in many ways to highlight this idea of curiosity. How do you look at these technologies, these trends as opportunities and something to be learned? And I know Yael and I, you know, we geek out on this stuff. Like we're excited to learn more. Even the biotech stuff. Like I said, I'm geeking out trying to figure out, you know, CRISPR technology and the like there. I think it's kind of our engineering backgrounds that maybe feed into that. But I think it's incredibly important and valuable because the world is never going to stop changing. The conditions are going to keep changing and the technology is going to keep evolving. And so you need to have that curiosity to continue to learn and continue to advance. And I'll actually bring it full circle back to the humility and to the humility that you never, it's a journey without end. You aren't going to reach the endpoint of your knowledge base and your ideation. And so you need to continue to push yourself to learn new things. It's just a fact of life in our age that we live in today.
And I want to point out, we talked a little bit about the curiosity and learning and all the good that can come out of it. Karen in the chat has highlighted how the developments around AI and generative AI and assisted tech is really helping individuals with disabilities. And it's allowing us again to operate in new ways, in the sense of having fewer limitations and barriers and entry points for individuals that maybe in the past were not active participants, and kind of meet individuals where they are. And so if folks are not comfortable going back to school or the thought of lifelong learning kind of brings up some kind of limitations that they may have experienced way back when they went through various parts of their learning education, some of those limitations are no longer there. You can have tools read out material for you. You can dictate. You can interact with the technology in so many different ways that maybe previously were not possible. So it's kind of worth embracing and also inviting other folks in to celebrate the new way of learning.
You know, another word for you here, which is diversity. And you kind of hit upon this before, mm-hmm. Yael. What we know about innovation is that it often emerges from the diversity of thought, different ideas coming together. Mm-hmm. There's some great questions in here about the intersections between these different technologies. Like, what about quantum and mm-hmm. AI? What about, you know, AR and VR and what's happening in AI? And, you know, my response to that is yes, yes, and yes. You know, the old adage, again, I'm going to date Yael and I, but you might remember the commercials for Reese's peanut butter, where it was like the chocolate and the peanut butter ran into each other and produced the Reese's peanut butter cup. But that's often how we think about innovation, and mm-hmm. Is this idea of other ideas coming together in novel ways produce new insights. So this idea of like, should you be thinking about the intersection between these technologies? Absolutely. You know, I started off by saying, hey, we need to reform the power grid, thinking about distributed power. And by the way, there's an AI challenge to this, right? You're bringing together technology. Mm-hmm. I think that's often the case where the greatest value is created is when we bring these things together. And again, that takes diversity of thought. It takes breaking out of our kind of current mental models and seeing the world in an entirely different way.
Yeah. As an avid listener to the Good Disruption podcast, I am thrilled that I get to ask this question as one of our last questions. I know we only have a couple minutes left. But so I'm going to put you both in a time machine. We're going to go forward to January 1st of 2025, New Year's Day. Happy New Year 2025, Mike and Yael and all our listeners. So when we look back at 2024, are you going to classify it as a good disruption, a bad disruption, no disruption at all? What's your forecast on that? And as I said, thanks so much for letting me ask this question, because I know it's like one of the buzz questions you always ask, but is this going to be good, bad, or not a disruption at all if we think of 2024 as a year?
So I mentioned that I do this work on democracy and capitalism. So I'm trying to take the whole political arena and put that aside there, because that one.
Good luck with that. Yeah.
It's just, I don't want to touch that one. If I put my technology hat on, I actually think when all is said and done, and I think there'll be, you know, ebbs and flows here, I do think we are in a really fascinating age, and I do think there's good disruption taking place here. And I think particular to AI, I will say, and actually I might even say this about clean tech, we're at a point in that hype cycle where maybe the hype cycle will start to decline, and that often is where things get the most interesting. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we make some of the more substantial advances in the application of these technologies over the next 12 months here.
Yeah, and I what I know, what I want to say with confidence, let me try. I believe that it will not be a no disruption year, implying I think so much is going on that it's going to disrupt in one way or the other. That could be bad, that could be good, but I don't think it's going to be a year that we will forget. It doesn't feel like many years recently are years that we're going to forget. I, like Mike, I think that we're going to see actual implementation of some of the technology and they'll come into play in a more organic way, not just the hype of them, but they'll actually be embraced where they need to be embraced and in parts of the industry and the economy that is ready for them. And so I do think that we're going to see the world is getting smaller. And I do think that we're going to see benefits across continents, across countries. We're going to see various things infusing and really changing emerging markets. And I think that is all good in many ways to improve the lifestyle and the capabilities to live a healthy and long life of many individuals around the world. But there are true problems that the world has to solve. It feels to me after a few years of maybe very folks focused very much internally on themselves, it feels like folks are more willing to embrace in a dialogue and solve societal problems. And I think that will help mm-hmm. technology result in some real improvements long term.
I'm glad we're keeping our streak of being optimists going here, even as we approach 2024. Let me first thank Devin for being with us. Wonderful always to talk with you, and really appreciate your insights and what you're seeing out in the CEO world and then the corporate market there. Thank you to Yael. It's always my partner in crime here. Always want to thank our head researcher, Becky Duff, and of course, our producer, Gary Peters, for all their work and efforts on our podcast. And just want to thank all of you for joining us today, sharing your questions, and look forward to hopefully seeing you or hearing you on a future podcast that we do.
Good Disruption is a podcast from the University of Virginia Darden School of Business.